Welcome to the Month End CPG Community Chat. The Month End will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands as well as other key contributors to the industry, all of which have vast experiences and insights that will be shared with the audience. Welcome to episode 14 of the Month End Podcast. We are looking forward to having our first return guest here, Mark Levitt from Forecast Easy. How are you doing today, Mark?
Hey, Brad. Great to be back.
Yeah, so Mark, on our last episode, discussed all things finance or forecasting 101, and this time we're going to touch base on very exciting new world of raising money in this space, equity crowdfunding. So this one will be equity crowdfunding 101, which is a whole new concept that we'll get into. To kind of, you know, summarize and kind of give more background on Mark, if you didn't listen to the prior podcast, Mark is a career consumer investment banker who developed strategic and financial plans that aided in transactions with the world's most admirable strategic acquirers, including Moët, Hennessy, Constellation Brands, Gallo, and Chanel. And then earlier this year, Mark founded Forecast Easy, a cloud-based forecasting tool that mirrors the forecasting process used in these transactions, but simplified into a framework that can be completed by founders in a matter of hours versus days or weeks. And I will second that related to Forecast Easy. So anyways, Mark, glad to have you back. And we are looking forward to the chat on equity crowdfunding.
Yeah, I think that's great, Brad. And one thing I'll mention, it's equity crowdfunding feels new, but really it's been around for almost a decade. It's just that really, I'd say in the last, you know, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, it's started to grow up a little bit in reasons I'm sure we'll touch on. And perhaps might be a lot more appealing to a broader, you know, number of brands and companies.
Yeah. There's clearly, I think the last 90 days from my visibility, just from our clients' requirements or needs of like, hey, what about this? What about that? I'm like, whoa, this thing's getting out of hand a little bit. And most of those are within the CPGA space in terms of understanding the needs and requirements, et cetera. So let's start off. What is it? What is equity crowdfunding?
That's a great question. It's a lot of people conflate it to the Kickstarters and the Indiegogos of the world where, you know, oh, are we giving out products to, you know, kind of get some cash up front? But equity crowdfunding is that, but actually you're selling real securities of your company. So you're selling the future cash flows or the future value of your company in exchange for some ownership stakes today, that in exchange for cash. So it's the same thing you do with friends and family. It's just that it's a wide group of folks that are starting to be called investimers. They're often your investors, and they're either your new customers, your existing customers, or potential customers.
Love it. Investimers for everybody out there. Investomers. I love it. So why now? Why the last 90 days?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a few things that have really changed and have really allowed this industry to grow up from the crowdfunding side. The most notable, which all the crowdfunding sites will let you know, is that the size of the raise has been expanded from $1 million maximum per year to $5 million maximum in a regulation CF listing, which, you know, most of the brands I work with, sort of that $2 to $3 million is the sweet spot that they're looking to raise. And so crowdfunding was often a partial solution where, you know, you could raise $1 million, that's great, but then we'd have to go out and raise, you know, 6 or 9 or 12 months later. This very much allows for the whole raise to happen at once. But more importantly for me, you know, what's kind of changed over the last 18 months is that the entire investment pool can be put on the cap table as a single line item. So rather than having to deal with, you know, 100 or 1,000 cats and dogs and getting their information and back and forth, you know, it's very much about one entity that each of the sites takes care of on your behalf. So it makes, you know, the reporting much simpler. I mean, really the minimum is one report a year to this base. A lot of the companies will give 2 or 3 or 4. But, you know, as that being the only sort of, you know, required aspect of it, it's a very approachable way to raise capital for a lot of companies.
Yeah, the that can get out of hand with having, you know, 500 new K-1 investors on your tax return.
And I think the one other thing, you know, Brad, to add in there is that as more and more people are talking about it, these communities are getting bigger. And so there are more investors just on the site that make the raises go faster and a wider, you know, grouping of folks looking at your brand. And if they say, hey, there's a great sun care brand on here, maybe I should invest in it, one, and two, should I try the products? So it's it's almost like a marketing event for a lot of these companies.
Yeah, like a separate sales channel slash marketing channel here. So you said regulation CF. What does that mean?
You know, there's a couple different raises. One is called an A plus, and that gets into some complicated areas where you can raise up to $50 million. But the regulation CF is what most of these companies are doing on the platforms. And the simplest way to describe it is it's up to $5 million raise, you know, at one given point in time or throughout a 12-month period of time.
Awesome. All right, so we're all familiar with the other ways of raising money, right? Equity, friends and family, Series A, Series C, you know, convertible notes, safe notes, debt, et cetera, right? So clearly this isn't going to replace all of those other entities. It'll complement them. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess, you know, what are the positives or why to do it versus the other items?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, Brad, what I'll say is most companies that can raise from friends and family will continue to do so. It's absolutely a great avenue, especially right at the beginning. Oftentimes it's people investing in you, not necessarily a business or a product. So, you know, you can get some pretty preferred terms and also some very patient capital. With that said, you know, friends and family, if you can't fill out a round with them, and if you look to private equity and venture capital, they're often going to tell you, hey, you know, we're writing bigger and bigger checks and our fund sizes are getting bigger. And so, you know, we kind of have to write a $5 million bigger check, or we can't analyze a company that's got under $2 million of revenue because we're data people and we need to see the velocity in the accounts. And if you're not $2 million in revenue, the numbers just kind of don't add up to anything that we can fully understand. So there's sort of a white space, if you will, of I either don't have friends and family or they're tapped out. I'm not big enough or ready enough for private equity. And I say this as positively as I can, but it's one of the only options for those in-between companies.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, a big part of where Accountly lives, and you can see the frustrations from our clients, as well as just the time commitments of trying to raise this and the amount of just time and conversations and back and forth, et cetera. A couple of things on that as we kind of move into, you know, considerations around this. Number one is like, what is the, from a consideration standpoint related to terms, right? Let's talk about terms for a second. So like a lot of times, if you are a small company, $1 million annual revenue, you're growing, but you look at a raise, you may be in between friends and family, you know, private equity, VC, et cetera, you're talking to angels, but it's a lot of different folks to talk to. But when you're going to the market related to this aspect, you can set more preferred terms from your perspective as the company, right? Like, can you kind of chat through that item?
Sure, absolutely. And you touched on a lot of great points right there, Brad, where most of these sites will allow you to raise capital in the way you'd like. So you could give preferred equity, you could give common equity, you can do any sort of debt instruments. Sometimes they're safe. I've even seen revenue shares, usually more for like retail establishments, not necessarily consumer brands. But so first you get to choose what type of security you're offering. And then second, and there's good parts to this and bad parts to this, you get to completely choose your valuation. There is no formula, there is no metric. It is, what do I feel like selling my securities for? And you see if the market agrees with you. If you can, you know, raise the money, that means you probably raised at the right amount. And if you can't, then you got to think of either sweetening it in certain ways or others. With that said, Brad, you can raise capital at an unbelievably high valuation on a lot of these sites, but I don't think it's in the best interest for a lot of brands to do so. If you're raising at too high of a valuation, of course, you'll be diluted a lot less than you would be at a lower valuation, but A, you're going to come into trouble, you know, 1, 3, 5 years from now, when you're having financial metrics that are more measurable that still can't justify a valuation that high. And two, you're going to have a lot of, you know, your investors and customers with you who are going to, you know, be demanding super fast growth to grow into those valuations. And it creates a construct where there's just a lot of kind of the incentives between the investors and management aren't necessarily there. And there's a lot of pressure, and there might be a lot of, you know, upset folks if it takes 5 years to grow into the valuation. So with that said, I'd say if you're raising capital on a crowdfunding site, definitely take the high end of valuation range. It's your right to do that. But keep it in something that's defensible and understandable and that you have the ability to grow into. You know, there's sites out there, there's companies out there raising at, you know, $50 million valuations that have barely sold anything. And that's just tough to grow into. It's going to lead to a lot of complications.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about the next raise that you're discussing in the future. I think like the short term, you know, issues with that is as these type of folks that are on the site investing in these companies, you know, we all see social media armies and things like that of, you know, somebody says a bad tweet and then 55 people, you know, negativity and they, you know, like it. Like this is where like this is a positive of where you're developing these thousands of investors, but what if you make them mad or irritate them or think that as they become more sophisticated in this aspect, realize, wow, that person or that company did us wrong because they really, you know, withheld information or weren't very authentic about like their valuation. So you have to consider that as well, because you're now getting 1,000 customers that are going to see your information versus before you may have had like 1,000 investors versus having like 10 people on your cap table in your private company and nobody else has access to your data. Right. So you just got to understand that because that's some big things there to understand.
And so to be really positive with that, Brad, you know, then the opposite is very true. If we're raising at a $7 million valuation and we can show, hey, we're doing well, our revenue's raising, we're a little more profitable. Now we're raising at a 12, you know, a year later on the same site. Your investors are going to be thrilled and they're going to buy more and more of your products. And there's just a really positive feedback loop there.
Correct. You're creating this community. It's interesting. There's a lot of so from kind of additional considerations here. So what about legal formation considerations related to like how you need to be set up as an entity, type of financial audit requirements or visibility or annual reporting? Can you kind of go into that for us?
Yeah. You know, for almost all companies, they either are or become C corps. I didn't know this. Very simple to do so. It doesn't take more than a couple weeks, and you know, a couple thousand dollars, and relatively, you know, easy to do. And they each of the sites provide resources, so that's one thing you need. Depending on how much money you're raising, I think there's a $500,000, $1 million, and then $5 million threshold. You'll need different type of either audited or reviewed financials by, you know, either a your own person who does the books or an external person or a full-on review audit. So those are definitely costs and time planning mechanisms you'll have to think about. But I'd say overall in the scope of the process of getting a capital raise done, those things, you know, are weeks worth of time, not months worth of time.
Yeah, and I'll say this from, you know, the accountfully background, right? There's a lot of our clients that have come to us saying, I need audited financials, I'm raising money, I need these tomorrow. Yeah. I think the biggest thing with this is, you know, Mark just said, is time considerations, like audits, reviews, whatever your requirements are for financials to begin the process, that takes time. Okay, so there's two aspects to that. Number one is having your ducks in a row, financials in place, you know, statements in place, reports, so then you can have a basis to start. So you're not starting from zero, because some folks come to us having started with us, haven't done their books in a year, and then they need audited financials. It's like, well, you're way behind the curve here. So staying ahead of the game, and clearly that's good, you know, a business owner, you know, just what you should be doing, you know, in terms of a business of keeping your bookkeeping updated, having those monthly financials. But then on top of that, having that auditor review does take time on top of that aspect, but you have a baseline. So you got to give yourself several weeks, you know, a couple months in advance of finding someone that can do that aspect. And this is an aspect of, as you're learning these type of new ways to raise money, understanding like how long in advance do I need to start thinking about this or starting to search for an audit firm or a review firm or things like that. So it's not always money considerations, a ton of time considerations come into place when you're doing something like this. Totally. And then the other kind of question is that I have on this is like industry related. you know, these rules have been around. There's some new rules that have happened now, you know, to how we really like expedite this process the last several months, last, you know, year or two. Is there some concerns? And I know you're not looking at a crystal ball, but is there anything for us or, you know, the folks to be worried about of like, well, will this stop at any point? If we do this right now, will this then impact our next round of Series B or what Series A or whatever their long-term plans are? Like, how does, is there anything for anybody to know about in relation to that?
I think you're thinking about this completely right. You know, as you kind of look at your best case scenario of business of how we plot it over the next 5-7 years, you know, our forecast again, right, of what we think we can do on a top line and profit level, you know, we should get a good sense of what our business might be worth if we hit those metrics. And then if we back into, you know, okay, we're a few years before that, what's a reasonable valuation to be raising at? And kind of everything we do is within reason. I think that'll set people up for a good chance to be successful. I think that where a lot of the issues may lie is if this is viewed as a money grab, where it's let's raise 2 million bucks as quickly as we can, you know, without having a ton of communication with these folks and an evaluation that they may never see again. I think we're going to see a couple of those examples happen in the next 2 to 3 years, but I think that'll be the minority. I mean, I really think that, you know, I've looked at a couple hundred consumer brands on the site, and I'd say their valuations are rich, but, you know, they're in the realm of somewhat reasonable. And if we stick to that and we keep going forward on this, you know, it's a viable path. I think what the investors also need to understand is, you know, we talk about penny stocks being highly volatile, right? And a great way to potentially, you know, lose your entire investment. I mean, these are a fraction of a penny stocks.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's good though, is that on average, people are investing 500, $1,000 a person, which, you know, is a lot to some people, but, you know, in the scheme of things, it's not a down payment on a car or a house or something like that.
Definitely, definitely good information. All right, let's get into process here.
Yeah.
So first question, like, what are the key websites or the apps or the locations to go to kind of learn more about this, or who's facilitating this type of, you know, process and workflow?
Yeah, you know, there, it seems like there's a new one every day that's popping up. You know, where I'll coach your listeners to go are probably the four that are largest and most consumer brand oriented. That's the Start Engines of the world, the WeFunders, the Republics, the Seed Invests. And each one has kind of their own nuances to it and what makes it interesting and different. You know, I've put a lot of research into this, and ultimately at the end of the day, I kind of suggest to folks I work with going to the biggest ones, because it's, you know, it sounds so simple, but at the end of the day, you want to go where there's the most people, the biggest community. You know, we're on Instagram and Facebook because, you know, it's got good tools and features, but also they're the biggest and all our friends are there. So I find the biggest ones and go there. Typically what they say, Brad, is about half of your dollars are going to be raised by people you know, people that are your customers or friends and family that you say to go on the site, or people you directly market to. And about half come from the communities themselves, just saying, hey, there's a new company here that looks pretty cool. So, you know, that's, with 50% of the dollars coming from, you know, the community, let's go to the biggest communities, the deepest communities.
Yeah. And that number is very surprising to me.
Oh, yeah.
How high it is, just related to kind of if you think through this process, but then that also tells you how big these communities are and the people that are interested in. From my aspect, I only see, like, as long as it's successful and this process is, I see that percentage getting higher and higher, which is super interesting for the, yep, you know, for the folks out there who have, you know, these brands who have great e-com or, you know, Instagram following, want to do something like this, consolidating their following and their actual customers and their community with something like that on these big sites, like this is going to be a very successful race for most of these folks, as long as they do that right.
And I think that, you know, the first thing these sites will ask you is, what does your, you know, sort of email list look like? How many people do you touch and what's your following on social? Because, you know, if you can get that 50% from your own to be driven up higher and faster, There's going to be so much momentum in an oversubscribed round, and you know, all the good aspects that come from this.
All right. How much can be raised, and like, what are the increments of raising, and are there?
Yeah. So, $1 million can be raised in 12 months under certain sort of registration and guidelines. And then the next pocket is up to $5 million within a 12 months. And then there's a third one that's up to $50 million, which is not relevant for most folks. It's usually the one to five. And often what will happen is you start out with the one and then you extend it and say, oh my gosh, we're oversubscribed. You know, we've expanded this to become a $2 or a $3 million raise. And, you know, there's a little gamesmanship, right, on, you know, hey, like, be a part of this. We're running out of space right now because so many people love us, and it's all about keeping the momentum. So, yeah, $1 to $5 million for most.
So if you, just from a mechanics standpoint, if you go and, hey, I'm going to raise $1 million at this valuation, and you don't hit $1 million, like, what happens for the folks who, of the 750K you did raise? Like, can you take that? Can you not? Does that go back?
Yeah, great question. There's typically a minimum amount where you'll say, I need to raise this amount of money before the raise is even, you know, contemplated. That number is often artificially low, somewhat purposefully, so that, you know, let's say you're trying to raise $1 million, but you raise 220. Typically, you're going to be able to take out that 220 and utilize it.
Gotcha.
But you have to disclose to your investors, of course, you know, what the minimum is before you can, you know, start to enact upon the funds.
Gotcha. And then I know you mentioned earlier of like the, you know, the amount that the investors are actually, you know, putting in the company. Is there a minimum for them of $100, $250, or does that matter by deal?
Yeah, it's dependent by deal. I'd say typically 250 to 500 is the entry amount, something in that realm. And then, you know, if you think of $1 million raise, it's going to have some really small checks in it, and it's going to have some really big checks in it. But the way most sites have been coaching me is it's 1,000 checks of $1,000.
Gotcha. Interesting. Is there similar to the ones, the sites you mentioned before, where you're just kind of, you know, giving money, Kickstarter, I lost it for a second. Are some of these brands, I'm assuming, are giving away merch and or like gift cards or whatever to kind of help support the raise process?
That's exactly right. There's little, you know, gates of, if you give $500, we'll give you a swag bag, $1,000, we'll give you 10% off your order and stuff like that. Some of the stuff gets crazy. I mean, if you give $100,000 on some of these, like, they'll fly you out somewhere and wine and dine you with the founders and some, you know, crazy stuff like that. But, you know, I would suggest little things to sweeten the pot would probably be helpful. But you don't need to go over the top here. People want to be a part of the brand. They don't need to, you know, use their the funds they're giving you don't necessarily need to be returned, you know, like 30% back to them.
Yeah, great idea. Take money in and spend it on unbreakable merch. And then how long does it take? So I guess what I'm saying is, if, you know, let's say I have, you know, $1 million raise, and I go out and within a week I raise $1 million just because I have the following, you know, I promoted and got it. Can I take it out then? Does it last 60 days if that's the initial spend, or if that's the initial kind of terms of the deal?
Yeah, so each site will be different. I'll say typically the raise process will look like, you know, Brad, let's press go. And it's 4 to 6 weeks to kind of get set up on the site and get your profile and your videos and all your digital assets and ready to go. And then from there, it typically takes, they say, 90-ish days for a successful raise. As few as 30 days, they've had successful raises. And some raises just, you know, take a full year to ever get done. But sort of the numbers they're putting in your head is 4 to 6 weeks to get started, 90 days to fill out the raise. So, you know, call it 4 to 6 months in total from the day that you press go. And each site is different, but once you're collecting dollars, there's usually like a 2 to 4 week grace period before you're able to start distributing some of those funds.
Gotcha. And then I guess the last thing is, can you distribute like partial? If like, yes. I'm going to raise two, oh, you can. Okay, great. So you can, if I'm raising $2 million and my minimum's 250 or whatever, I hit that, I can could technically take out 250K or some exactly. amount like that.
You, okay. you have to hit your minimum. And I know some sites do that. I don't know all sites do that, but you know, that's right. You set the minimum at 100,000, you're trying to raise a million. Once you hit the 100,000 in 2 or 4 weeks or whatever it is goes by, then start taking out the cash. And, you know, the one area we haven't touched on too is that you're going to have to spend a lot of time and effort marketing this race, that there's going to be some non-insignificant dollars that they suggest reinvesting back into marketing and driving demand into buying these shares. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they say it's the raises themselves that help to fulfill upon themselves, because you know, you raise 250 grand and then you take out 50 to put right back in to then raise the next 750 or something to that effect.
Yeah, it's interesting. The whole kind of process, mentality, and strategy around it, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
All right, what does it cost?
So there's typically two fees. One is a percentage of capital raised in, you know, 6.5 to 8.5, somewhere in that range, 6.5% to 8.5%. Some sites will take a percentage or two of equity as well. But what's good about that is, you know, you've set the valuation. So if you set it at $40 million, you know, they share in above $40 million.
Yep.
And then typically there's some cash costs of, you know, think of $10,000 to $25,000 as sort of the amount of a little bit of legal, a little bit of financial. Some of them have you pay a starting fee. Some of them will take that starting fee out of dollars distributed to you so you don't have to outlay cash. But again, with marketing, I would think about $10,000 to just kick off your campaign with some marketing assets to help, you know, drive in the first folks, which are the most important, because if your raise says zero on it for 3 weeks, you know, you're a little bit dead in the water. You want that to go from zero to 100,000, 200,000 as quickly as you can.
Gotcha. So basically you're going to have your kind of processing kind of merchant fees, right? Where the actual site takes a percentage of what was raised and possibly equity. You have kind of your legal upfront, kind of see conversion, audits, reviews, financials upfront. You have possibly some startup costs that go directly to the site, or they take that at a later date. And then the last thing, and probably the most importantly here, is the marketing budget that you need to allocate, really have a good strategy in both short-term and long-term on that process.
That's exactly right. And just to throw some numbers out there that, you know, surprised me a little bit as I've worked with a couple brands through here, marketing could be 5 to 10% of the overall raise, which is, you know, almost doubling, you know, the overall fee. With that said, the fee goes straight to the company. The marketing can be used, you know, for other purposes and hopefully and theoretically brought in more customers for you. But, you know, you add it up and it could be 12, 15% of capital raised goes, you know, goes out the door in these situations.
Yeah. It's interesting because you can think about how are companies factoring in these this marketing spend and upfront spend to their cost to acquire a customer or lifetime value of the customer? Because literally you are, you know, you could be identifying new customers and, you know, and you're paying for it through this raise process, but also there's an indirect possible spend. And some of these, what percentage of those kind of investors or new folks that weren't that 50% that weren't part of your army that are now going to be part of your army that basically came through that? So
totally.
All right. So kind of wrapping up a couple other things here. So, you know, I guess I'm going to end on the kind of the other question, but just from, you know, your end, like from a moving forward standpoint, like, is this going to be around for a long time? Is that your gauge? Like just from a thought process and seeing clearly other industries and markets, you know, democratizing everything, right? And cutting out every middleman that exists, you know? So like, I mean, what's your kind of, you know, your thesis on that?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think about Robin Hood all the time. I mean, this is Robin Hood on the micro level. You know, I'll answer in the negative and say equity crowdfunding is absolutely wrong for so many investors. And it's absolutely wrong for so many companies. But with that said, there's enough good to it. That it really is becoming a viable way for companies that are sort of in that $500,000 to $3 million in sales to get to the next level. And there's really appealing aspects to it. And I think the downsides, you know, are, you know, one of them is your financials are public. Some people really care about that, and that's a non-starter. Other people couldn't care less. You know, I haven't heard any bad stories, but theoretically, you know, if you've got 1,000 investors, you might have a little bit of an issue with, you know, an angry investor. I haven't heard any issues of this, you know, and theoretically the sites are there to help you. But, you know, those are kind of the two largest negatives I've seen or heard about or questioned. And just the ability to raise $1 million, $3 million in, you know, half a year. I don't know another avenue for a $500,000 to $2 million in revenue brand to do that without having a really good network of friends and family. And, you know, if this is one of your, you know, brand owners' dreams to grow their brand into the next XYZ, I think this is an area they have to think about as a really good option for helping them get from point A to point B.
Yeah, I agree. It's a, you know, having more options, I think in everything in life just makes everything better, even though some people are going to mess up or it's risky for some people, or, you know, some people don't follow through properly, but I mean, why not? Is there specific industries that are more successful than the others?
Yeah, great question. Consumer is, you know, really important because it's typically the price point's reasonable, right? If you can buy something for $10 to $100 each, if it's a whiskey bottle or a bottle of sunscreen or something like that. And it's just industries people understand. So almost all of your clients, I think, would be, you know, potentially eligible because highly visual, storytelling, people, you know, reasonable price point. The other area is some like tech companies, like far out tech that I just don't even try to understand. You know, big ideas, pre-revenue often, that are raising huge amounts of money at huge valuations. And it's about, you know, I've seen things that are like pizza making robots and like, you know, cars that fly and stuff like that. So I'll let that be and stick more to the consumer brands. But I'd say those are the two I see most often.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's those that are in front of the eyes of the folks that are investing. And then I think the tech space makes sense because some people just want to get on the huge upside of those ridiculous valuations that nobody can understand. But that's a side conversation. So if my company's doing this today, and we're going to move forward with this you know, process or this plan, what are the three things I should think about in my head to start executing on, or to start like to do today in order to properly be successful? So I'm in, I pressed the button on the 4 to 6 weeks upfront. Like, so I've already made the decision. Now what do I need to do to go execute? What are the three things I should think about?
Yeah, great question. The first thing I think about is storytelling. You know, it's the digital assets, it's the video and it's the visuals and the story. For better or for worse, a lot of these investors just don't care about the valuation, similar to, you know, the Robinhood and the meme stocks we were talking about. And so you have to tell your story in a really appealing visual way that brings the folks along with you. So get your digital assets to be, you know, top notch. That's first and foremost. And then second, you know, plug for you, talk to your accountants and lawyers, right? And make sure that everything you're putting out there is right and representative of your business. And then third, I think instead of just telling the story of the digital assets and, you know, the brand and what's so great about it, you got to find a way to tell the story of the future, you know, and where we can go and how we can get there and who's going to help us get there and what the exit might look like one day. You know, not necessarily dollars and values, but sort of who would buy this? You know, if we're a nut butter company, like who are the players out there that would be really interested? And I think that when you explain, you know, oh, look, Hershey's has been trying to get into the nut category for a long time unsuccessfully, and here's why. And here's five other companies that, you know, are similar. That gives people wide eyes and really excited about investing because they say, oh my God, this makes so much sense. So yeah, digital assets, get your financials and legal back in order, and then tell a great story about the future and who might be able to buy you.
I love it. Yeah, so storytelling, get your support system in place, and then forecast looking forward. And that kind of loops back around to what Mark does at Forecast Easy and kind of the forecasting podcast we had last episode in episode 13 of the month end. So, man, that was a lot of information, Mark. It was fantastic. I learned a ton. I knew a touch of this, but now I know a lot more. Looking forward to the folks that listen to this to be able to really grasp it as well, because I think there's a lot of information out there. And really, I think when you understand at a high level what it is and how you can execute on it, you're really able to piece together your, you know, your 1 to 3 to 5 to 10 year kind of plan of raising money, right? And where does it fit in depending upon the different variables that exist kind of in terms of your business's life cycle. So appreciate the time, Mark. Again, Mark Levitt from Forecast Easy. Really appreciate all the information on crowdfunding equity. Where can we find you, Mark, if we need to?
It's mark@forecasteasy.com, M-A-R-C.
Cool. Yep. And again, forecasteasy.com is a great forecasting tool for all the small businesses out there. So Mark, thanks again. Appreciate it. And have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Brad.